everybody. How are you today? Thank you so much for coming back to the Ghost Seat Talk podcast experience. I am your host, the most, Mark Chappardini, and it is a joy to welcome you aboard. All steam ahead, we're going to be having a lot of fun with our next guest. Forget about Prince of Thieves. We're going to speak to a sonic siren who will steal your soul. The incomparable Nina Bergman is a dynamic duchess, descendant of Danish royalty, and she has a she could do more push-ups than me, so she is going toe-to-toe with Daniel Bernhardt and Deathstalker. She has Letters from the Fire lead singer. She's just a monster and an animal, but she promised she'd be gentle. So before we get into it, like to welcome Nina to the show. How are things in your world?
Wow, with that introduction, I mean, I'm amazing. I'm floating on a pink cloud. Thank you.
Well, yeah.
I'm good. You know, life is really good right now.
Excellent.
Yes.
And you're living it up in the L and the A?
Yeah, I'm back in LA right now. And then I think I'm going to hang tight here and prep because next year is going to be a roller coaster.
Oh.
Next year is going to be a big one. Yeah. A lot of traveling and a lot of shooting. So I'm just, I'm hoping to stay tight at least until mid-December. Yeah. And to stay here and enjoy LA, even though it's raining for once.
Where was that in August or June or March or whenever those, but literally anytime we needed it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, why don't we go in the Wayback Machine before we get to Deathstalker and singing your heart out. You into the business. What tickled your fancy? What made you want to be on stage and in front of people?
I was one of those I knew since I was a young girl. I went to give my grandmother, my Russian gypsy grandmother, flowers on stage. And I remember just going up there and giving her the flowers. And then I remember all of the unconditional love and attention. You know, I could barely even speak, but I knew that. And then standing at the sideline watching my grandmother perform, I think it's just in my blood. And then my grandfather was one of Russia's greatest actors, most respected actors. And they say it's skip a generation. Like, my dad is a professor at the Danish Film School, and my mom had an architectural brain. They weren't, you know, artists, so I think it skips a generation. So I think I was just cursed since I was a young girl.
you live for the adoration of others, but you perform like
That's how it started. That's how it started. And then I think, you know, I started in ballet at 4 years old. And then I just loved the expression. You know, I was one of those kids. If I couldn't perform, I would bring my little ghetto blaster with my girlfriends on the street, and we would do street performances, you know. We would do hip hop dance and tattoos, you know, that I choreographed. So, you know, I was always one of those. And I would draw and I would write. And I was just, I just needed to express. I had a lot to say at a very young girl, you know, so yeah.
Well, what kind of music were you into? What was coming out of the boombox? What was moving your body?
Well, my dad wouldn't allow me to listen to any pop. As a kid, I mean, I had to listen to Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, you know, like real music, you know. I remember I was allowed to listen to Michael Jackson, U2, but no, I listened to like very eclectic music, Nina Hagen, Andreas Wollenweider, like very weird because of my dad. I wasn't allowed to listen to regular music. So again, I had a very eclectic taste growing up as a kid, you know, because there's no TV, no pop music, you know, unless it was good pop music.
The bar is set very high in the Bergman household.
Yeah, I listen to a lot of classical, you know, a lot of Russian composers, you know, a lot of classical music, hence the classical ballet, you know, and hence I trained opera, you know, most of my life when I was younger. And so I just, the bar was set very high, you know, because my dad had, I don't know, he just wanted me to be, you know, I guess, I don't know what he wanted. Yeah.
Well, sometimes it's difficult for that, you know, to exist when your parents want you to be a doctor or, you know, a musician. And I could just imagine young Nina rocking Shostakovich, you know, pressing play and, you know, break dancing and spinning on your head. That could be really fun core memory.
Yeah. I had some of those. I had some of those. I remember I hid my Linkin Park CDs in the freezer.
I did the same thing. I bought a Metallica cassette on a class trip in elementary school, and I had to hide that. With the money they gave me, I bought a troll with those crazy hair and a
Yes.
Metallica cassette in fifth grade. I was like, yeah, you got to keep that stuff secret.
Yes. Okay. So your parents, but even you grew up in Texas?
New
Where did
York.
you? New York. Come on, New Yorkers. They wouldn't let you listen to Metallica.
It felt wrong. I don't know, just like, you're not supposed to like, I listened to George Carlin when I was younger, all these things that you think that your parents are not going to like is usually what you gravitate towards.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I didn't listen to, I mean, the drummer is Danish, so I think there's a good reason right there, but I listened, but I was a Linkin Park. That's what ripped my heart out at the time.
Well, do you what is I have quite a fondness for Linkin Park. I kind of like Meteora better than Hybrid Theory, but what do you what's your song or album that you go to?
I mean, Hybrid Theory was like the one. I don't know. I mean, I had the pleasure because they stole my drummer, Bones Elias. Chester started his own band, Dead by Sunrise, so he snatched my drummer, and that's how we were connected. That's how I
Okay.
met the whole team, and that's how we started, forming a bond. So I had an insight. So I think now that I got to know him better, some of my favorite songs weren't my favorite songs at the time. I was just very angry, so the harder, the angrier. Those were my favorite. So I could get it out, and those lyrics, they just ripped my heart out, even though I didn't really understand them when I was super young, because I didn't speak English, but I felt it. So yeah, I would say Hybrid Theory because of, that was like the one. I don't know. At the time, both
Well,
of them.
I really like everything, even that sort of the reanimation that where it's hybrid, where it's a Hybrid Theory reanimated, where they kind of infuse it with like rap and stuff. That's
I
I didn't
love
like
that
it at
too.
first, but then the more I listened to it, and I think that's funny about movie and art and all these things. If it doesn't hit you right up front, yeah, let it sit with you a little bit, and I think you'll find things that you appreciate. Which I've kind of done that as I've gotten older, just spending a little more time with things, but. Besides the point, what we're getting at is feuds between bands are a real thing. And so who was your replacement drummer? How did you get over that heartbreak?
Well, I started in the music business, in New York City, and so I've been in so many bands and so many rotating drummers, I've been I came to this to Los Angeles to replace the lead singer of Kidney Thieves. They lost their singer, and that was my favorite underground band, Kidney Thieves. And then I toured with them, and I had an incredible drummer back then called Sean. Then I started my own band, and the Kidney Thieves became Shock Nina because people would meet me, and then they would see me on stage, and they didn't know it was the same person. So the band became Shock Nina because they didn't know it was me, And then I started Dead Rose Beauty with where I handpicked my bandmates, and then we were my vision of the band, and had a great run, toured a lot, and did really well, built it up from the ground. And then I got snatched up by Warner Brothers, and I signed a big record deal. And that's when kind of everything fell apart. The first thing they did was they let my band go. And then, went through the whole machine, and then finally got out. And then I joined a band called Letters from the Fire. And again, another amazing drummer, that would do the trick with like putting flames in the drums and the opening, like very theatrical, amazing drummer. So I've had so many amazing drummers. I've been very fortunate. I'm very into, because the drummers are the backbones of the band, and it's what drives the whole thing forward. So for me, drummers is, I'm very particular with my drummers, and I've been very fortunate to have great drummers.
Yeah, like you said, the backbone. But take that Blue Man Group. Let's say you set your drums on fire and wow the audience.
Yeah, that was my whole trick. Every show he would take, and then we start the whole show with him putting his drums on fire. It was a awesome intro. Yes.
Well, speaking as a force behind the microphone and a band leader, so to speak, what is your pregame ritual? What gets you hyped and amped? I mean, because even with something like the Love Song by The Cure, which you redid, has like a real energy to it. How do you like get in that mode?
I think I am in that mode more or less. I do my classical warm-ups every time, especially when you're on the road and everyone, their warm-up is a beer, chuck a couple of beer, whatever, do some shots, and I'm in there going la 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 la, me 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 me, I'm trained operatically, so, and for me to jump around like that and scream on stage, it takes a lot of stamina, and so for me, it's actually the opposite. I'm the one that you see at soundcheck who brings my yoga mat, and I will do yoga, in the venue, and I drink my herbal tea, and I do my stretches, and I do my meditation, and I work out with the whoever will work out with me, whatever other bands I'm touring with, and it's actually quite the opposite. Like the amping up is easy. I mean, that's like as soon as you stand behind a drum kit and you have a Marshall blaring in your face, you don't need for me to be amped up, and you hear those riffs on the guitar that you've dreamt of, and I don't know, I don't need any, I need the opposite, I need the opposite, because it's like, I mean, how can you negate? It's impossible. If I took you and put you on stage and you felt all of those people's energy, and you hear the drums, you hear the bass amps, you hear the guitar amp, I mean, there's no way you're not gonna just fly.
You make it sound so magical. I can't wait to come to LA. I'm just gonna.
It is magical. Performing is magical, but it's like what, an hour or two out of your life, and then there's all the other stuff that's not so magical, That's the thing. That's what makes it hard. It's the other
Yeah.
stuff. It's not the music. Music is easy. Performance, it's the fun part. It's the other stuff, You travel new city every day. Soundtrack checks, radio, early morning radio shows, like that's the stuff that'll all the traveling.
Well, I imagine that's going to be tough on anybody, but when you have a yoga mat and some herbal tea to calm your nerves and help you get through it, I think you can probably get through anything. And if not, you just yell at somebody and they'll probably just do what you say. So, but the soup du jour, which is this soup of the day, that sounds tasty, I'll have it, is Deathstalker. Why don't we talk about that? You play Grendel, which is a small but powerful part, but also the song at the end. Walking alone, you join the ranks of My Heart Will Go On and Back in Time. And with an end credit song, your key is just don't screw it up. So tell me about the
True.
process of being in front of the camera and in our ears, so to speak.
Well, the front of the camera was easier because I worked with Daniel Bernhardt before. We've done Hell Hath No Fury that I starred in, and then like I look at it as a full circle. I got my revenge in that movie. And then we did Chief of Station together with Aaron Eckhart, even though we weren't in scenes together. And then we did Deathstalker, and then he got his then he got his revenge, right? So it's the that one felt very natural, and if to play a fantasy movie like that and to play a character like that, I mean, that's a dream come true. You get to play, and the director was very cool. He let us play, and I felt very comfortable working with Daniel, and it was a fun, very natural feeling part. And we get to play, and the director let us build, like they had a little relationship. They had something going on before, but because of Deathstalker was always l such a lone wolf, he didn't want to obey my union rules. I'm the head of the thieves, and you have to pay a union fee, so he didn't do that. And therefore we, he went his separate way. I went my way. I'm a union girl. And then, he was the one that got away. So that was like the backstory. And if they ever do a prequel, Stephen Kostanski, then you will get to know. Then you'll get to know. Then I would love to build out that story.
And that's my takeaway too. It ends funny. You can tell that Steven loves Army of Darkness and Ghostbusters and Willow, but I don't really want to see how him and Doodad and Brisbane continue, I really do, like you said, I want to see how you fared and more of your journey before you meet an untimely demise from three swamp creatures. It's pretty terrible, but.
Yeah, and that's what inspired the song, because Deathstalker was just such an interesting character because he is that lone wolf, he's heartless, he's all of those things, but at the same time, there is a beautiful person once you start digging in there, right? And that's what's kind of inspired the song, and that's where I wrote it from, because there is a real human in there. You just need to, he's just a survivor. You just need to get through all the crap, and which I thought Steven did a great job too, exploring that in the movie. He's heartless, and then he finally starts trusting women, and then he gets burned. So he did. He had a really great arc. So I that song came inspired by that, and then I thought they wanted an '80s song because it's an '80s homage, but Steven was like, "No, I want '90s homage in Queen of the Damned." And I was like, well, hello. I mean, that's what I write in my sleep, So that way it was very, very easy I say it's easy. It's like it's the ideas for me, inspiration has never been a problem. It's like once you get the inspiration, then you spend the hours of making it into a cohesive song, choruses,
Sure.
verses, how it's gonna feel. And I worked with the producer before. I did Love Song with him, the Canadian producer that produced this one. And then we were lucky enough to bring in a guitar player from a band called Offspring. So he's the guitar player, Jonah. So he
No
came in and
way.
he did all the guitar riff. And he's one of those, he plays any instrument. So, it's like you don't really need anyone else. You have Jay Roston, who's an amazing producer who worked with everyone. I think you worked with Metallica too, with your band. Yeah, I mean, brilliant Canadian producer. And then you have multi-talented Jonah who plays every instrument. And then they just sat and listened to my trying to sing out what I wanted, like, because I clunk on the piano, but I don't really play. I can play a little bit, but not really. So they managed to translate what I was hearing. And then they gave me an insane track, and then I wrote the melody and everything, and then we just kind of tweaked it together, and then we have Walking Alone.
That sounds like the perfect process because I what I do for Go See Talk is a side gig. I'm actually in architecture. So
No.
whenever we do work, sometimes you scribble something up and you show it to a contractor or show it to a client. It's like, this is what we want to build. It's like, okay, I'll pay for that. Show it to a contractor. He's like, I could do that. You're like, and you may not know about construction, but next thing you know, you've got a 44-story building based on something, a scribble you did. So I
Scribble,
love that your process works so seamlessly.
But it's not, I mean, I have spent my whole life collecting those people that have the same vision as me. That's what it is. It's like, it's like being in a band. It's like you're three, four, however many people you are in the band, soulmates. They need to be a soulmates. And with Jay, I just always had that rapport. Like we just understand each other. And then I've worked with, I mean, I think at this point, I would say thousands of guitar players. And then Jonah just like, sometimes there's magic and sometimes it clicks, and that combo just really clicked. So I'll definitely be doing more stuff with them. Because it was the first time the three of us working together. So it's like, sometimes it is fireworks and sometimes it's like kind of like dating. Everything seems right. And then it's you just don't have you get in person it's just not there or whatever, but on paper it's there and it's the same. Everything seems right on paper, but then when you get in the room, it's just not there. And the same with the music, but it was there. They just totally got what I was going for. I was like, they just got it. They just yeah. I don't know. It's a chemistry thing, I think.
But you just made a case for a three-person relationship. That's that's the key to happy matrimony is three people. That sounds terrible. We're going to edit that out. But I do want to go back to how something is right, how I guess how proud you are of your work. Because I think that when you do something right, it's simple And I'm just going to go to your lyrics. How does it feel like to run the rest of your life with nowhere to go? How many O's are in go, by the way? But I mean, that just is so like beautiful. Like the imagery, even without seeing Deathstalker, just the idea of running the rest of your life with nowhere to go. It's phenomenal.
Well, because it's kind of like acting. I cannot act something I don't have inside of me. I cannot write something I don't have inside of me. Like, I know Deathstalker, you know, I know what it feels like to be on a treadmill, 100 miles an hour, and you just can't get off because, God forbid, you sit in quiet for 5 minutes, then you're going to think about your life, you know? So you just keep running. So I have a Deathstalker inside of me too, if that makes sense. Otherwise, I couldn't write it. You know, I don't understand. I don't know how. I don't think you can. I mean, for me, I cannot act anything I don't have. You know, Stanislavski said, you know, I'm a method actor, and he said, if you know how to kill a bug, you're a killer. You know, just the decision to take another creature's life, just, you know, you have to have it. So I totally felt Deathstalker. I know where he's coming from. I know what it feels like to be scared of love. I know what it feels like to be out there just keep doing, you know, he's on this path and he can't stop. You know, he doesn't know anything else. I mean, hello, that's me. I don't know anything else than the path I'm on. You know, walking alone, you know, I'm here in crazy America. I mean, I'm an American now. I love America, but it's crazy. And I'm from one of the happiest countries in the world. Why the hell would I do that? I don't know, but I'm still here, you know, on the treadmill, you know, on that walking alone journey, like Deathstalker. So it felt very natural. And then, you know, luckily I had a great relationship with Daniel, so I try to get some insights, but I feel like I ended up making it my interpretation instead of Deathstalker's interpretation. I made it my interpretation of Deathstalker. I made it from my point of view, looking at him, asking him these questions, you know, from all
Yeah.
of us, kind of from the audience, kind of a thing.
That's no, it's lovely. I love that. And you brought up something that I can't think of anything else to do but ask. When you do find sort of your people on set and you are working with the other actors, do you feel like you get more, not direction, but do you feel like you get more of the story from the other actors or do you get it more from the director?
Oh, definitely from the other actors. I mean, I feel like my job as an actor is to fulfill the director's vision, right? And so I do my homework and I prepare, but ultimately my job is to fulfill Steven's vision. But someone like Steven is so great because he's open. You know, he was open to the backstory. He didn't even think of that, you know, when I brought it up. And Daniel was the same, though. He was like, yeah, they definitely had a past. And he was like, oh wow, I didn't even think of that. And I'm, you know, and he's just so open. So I think with great directors is it's a collaboration. And then I think you have the more strict directors that have such a clear vision that you're just kind of there as an instrument to fulfill it. And then you try to be as authentic to it as you can. And then I would say not, but when you work with great actors, then they elevate whatever you come in with. You know, I'm always open. I do my prep, but ultimately, you know, I just come in as a blank slate, and then whatever happens, I can, you know, Bruce Lee, be like water, right? You can adjust. If Daniel did something weird, I can do something else. Or if I, you know, I didn't know it was going to have a throne. You know, when I came to set, I had this magnificent throne that Steven said that I should have taken home as a souvenir from the set. But
Try to get that on the airplane, right?
was like, Steven, how exactly do I need my extra seat for my throne? Like, how exactly was that going to like work out, right? So yeah, so then you like play with it, you know, that's the fun. All of a sudden I have this throne, you know, and then I was like, what the hell? Now I need a crown. So then I went to wardrobe and I was like, I need a crown. And they were like, what? How are we gonna do that? I was like, I don't know, but I'm a thief, so scraps, figure it out, you know? And they did such a great job figuring it
Or
out.
I could method act. I can just go rob a jewelry store, get my own crown. Like, no, it's for a movie. It's research. It's research. Well, let's have one more Deathstalker question because I think
Okay.
that the relationship between the two makes a lot more sense now that I'm speaking to you. So he has a map of places he doesn't go, bugs, danger. Do you have in your mind your mentality, your way of being, like a map that's similar? Like, this is stuff I don't do. This is stuff I stay away from, like mantras, things like that.
In life or acting
Just
work?
in life, I think. Yeah, let's open it up to the bigger picture.
Well, I live by I'm a very strict disciplined person in the sense of living with grace and integrity. So I have worked very hard on myself. There's certain things I do, and there's certain things that I don't want to do. Not what's okay and not okay in the world, but for me as a person, because I wanted not to be on a treadmill and not to keep running. I wanted to get to a place in my life where I could finally sit home on a Friday night and read a book without having FOMO that some great band is playing, or you know what I mean? Or, I just wanted some serenity. So, I had to go to a 12-step program and get some help to like really restructure my life, get some discipline and structure around my life of what feels like okay things and not okay, because I was just so like death struck on a treadmill, just doing whatever I needed to do, step on people, walk on people, do whatever. You know what I mean? I wasn't living a clean life. Now I can look in the mirror and be like, good job, Nina. I mean, you fuck up all the time, but good job.
And you've got abs and muscles to prove it. I mean, holy crap. You could start your own division of the military. There's the Army, Navy, and then there's the Bergmans.
I mean, you never know. I'm starting something. It's coming out in 2 weeks. I am
Oh.
starting something in
Okay.
that.
Well, you teased it. Can we get a little more of a
Yeah,
taste? Appetizer.
it's called Fierce and Vegan, and it's
Okay.
a master class, a 12-week master class that I've developed over years now. And you take the course. There's videos, there's workbooks. It's up on my website, so you can take a look at it. And we will launch it about a week or two. And first, I have a TED Talk that's coming out about how it came about,
A
called
TED
Fierce and
Talk. That is
Vegan.
like
TED
legit.
Talk, yes. So it's legit about they came to me, they wanted to know how I do what I do and have a vegan lifestyle. And then I'm gonna launch the master class, and I have a little app called Nina, so you can have me in my pocket, and when you have a question about life or food or whatever, you can ask her whatever you want.
Just don't ask her about treadmills. It sounds like she's been traumatized. That's come up so many times during
So
this podcast. Stay out of the health club, people.
I have that master class coming out called Fierce and Vegan, and then if it does well, I'm gonna do Fierce and Fit, and that's where if you want to get look like me, then you just do what I suggest.
Even if you're not Danish.
Even if you're not Danish and half Russian and whatever, you just do your version of it.
Okay. I think you
Yeah, it's for
you
everyone. It's for because I've toured, so I created it, for anyone that is like, I don't want to eat animals, I want to get healthy or whatever. And I was like, I can't tell you, I can't help you in 5 minutes. But so I was like, if I go tomorrow, what do I want to leave? I want to leave Fierce and Vegan. So I have a program that will help people to get to all my secrets, all my tricks. You don't need any money, you don't need any time. You can do it anywhere in the world, because that's what I did have been doing. So it's all tested on myself. And it's just all little tricks of apps you can get for free that will help you find out what's in the food that you eat, mentality, exercises, writing exercises, mantras, affirmations. I mean, you name it, all of my tricks is in there. So you can be quiet enough so you can actually do what you're meant to be doing.
And then at night, you can rock out to Letters from the Fire after you're fierce and vegan. So
Yeah,
that's
but that is part of it. You gotta let it out, Otherwise, it just stays inside, and that's what makes you sick. I mean, stress is the biggest killer. It's not food, it's not whatever. It's stress.
Yeah, you
So
know, I've taken this idea that it's derivative of Smell the Roses, but like a lot of people say, I'm going to be happier once I get that amount of money, or I'm on that vacation, or I get this car. And it's like, well, what if that never happens? So it's like, I mean, it's, life's a journey, not a destination, but it's the idea of be happy about the moments you have, not waiting for that one moment. So, hey, we should start a podcast together. There's so much positivity.
I know. I mean, I work on it. It's not there naturally, I tell you that. I'm half Russian. The world is ending. And we might as well just give up because what's the point? You know? So it's yeah, no, it's yeah, this is yeah, a lot of work, but if I can, anyone can.
Well,
So
I've had such a treat talking with the Queen of Thieves, but before we go, we usually like to ask our guests what are their 10 favorite things. But I think with you specifically, we might have to tailor this to music because it might be a little tougher. What are
okay.
your 10 favorite albums? And you
Wow.
won't upset anybody if you don't name them, but.
Okay, so one that had a huge impact is The Kill, 30 Seconds to Mars. The Garbage album, The Garbage. Best off U2. I love U2. I'm not, you know. When we have to put in Linkin Park too, because we talked about Linkin Park, you know. So, yeah, either one. Like, I can't decide. It, you know, it depends on the mood. And then we have, you know, one of the albums that impacted me profoundly is the Farinelli album from the movie Farinelli. It's the first castrato, so it's classical music. And then what else impacted me growing up? I'm thinking now. I mean, it's so hard. I mean, there's so many great ones. So many. I'm thinking, you know, because I don't want to. I mean, Prodigy, you know, is like still to this day, Massive Attack, any of those electronic bands, you know, the Messene album, what else? There's so many good ones.
You could name
Oh,
them your own. You could
Evanescence
name
first.
Offspring.
The Fallen, Evanescence changed my life when she came out, obviously. And what else? What else? My dad is gonna be killing me right now. He's like, "What about this one? And what about
Did I teach you
that
nothing? Go to your room.
one?" I know. I mean, I can't. It's too hard. That's too many because, you know, we have to put Led Zeppelin in. We have to put, you know, it's like, where does it end? You know, when there's some amazing new ones and there's amazing. So I think I'm gonna end there.
Okay, that's eight is enough, so they say. Dick
Okay.
Van Patten. Well, Nina, you have been a delight. Everyone, check out Deathstalker. Everyone, check out Letters from the Fire. Everybody, if you want to be fierce and vegan, you know who to contact because Nina can be in your pocket. Sounds weird to say, but everyone, thank you for your time, Nina, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was fun.